Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1938. Once again, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee invite you to be their Hollywood guests. So imagine yourselves on stage 30 of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, where tonight you'll meet Freddie Bartholomew, Fanny Bryce, and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Mary Martin, Douglas MacPhail, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. And here's your host for this hour of entertainment, Robert Taylor.
Thank you, Ted. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, Ted has given you the main outlines of the show, but here are one or two other good reasons why I think you'll find it good listening. Number one, Fanny Bryce will not only appear as Baby Snook, but will also sing the narration of Walter Samuel's dramatic musical composition, Hollywood, the words of which were written by the famous columnist Ed Sullivan. That's number one. Fanny Bryce will sing. Two, Frank Morgan will not sing. Three, I will not sing. Now, if that isn't enough to keep your dialers happy for the next 60 minutes, then I don't...
Pardon me, Bob.
Yes, Meredith?
I'm not going to sing either.
Well, there you are, ladies and gentlemen. That's the greatest lineup of non-singing stars any program can boast. How can Bing Crosby follow that?
Speaking of Crosby, Bob, we've got a lot of show tonight, so don't you think we'd better get going with the opening number?
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Meredith Wilson and his orchestra open the program with Meredith's own arrangement of Wide Open Places.
And rode in the rodeo last year. And now I'm back in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And I ain't so doggone happy to be here. Take me back to the wide open places. Let me bask beneath the bright neon light. Let me see those sunray faces in the wide open places that are open, open all night.
Off that number with a lot of zing. What's come over you?
Why, haven't you heard, Bob? In 3 weeks, I'm leaving for La Belle France. That's what they call it over there.
You mean the insiders, huh? Ever been abroad before, Meredith?
No, but gee, I'm lucky. Who do you think is taking care of my tickets and everything for me?
Who?
Frank Morgan.
Oh, are you lucky?
Oh, listen, Bob, don't be sarcastic. You fellows don't understand Frank. He's a lovely guy, and he's always willing to help out a pal. And besides, he's got influence with the steamship line. Why, he's getting me my tickets for 50% off.
Yeah, if you think Frank Morgan can handle that, you're 50% off.
Well, that's what you think. Here he comes now, and I'll bet that he's got the tickets. Hello, Frankie!
Hello, Dizzy. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Frank.
What did I tell you? Well, Frank, what about La Belle France?
Oh, yeah, isn't she a honey? I'm going down to see her tonight.
No. What about the ticket?
Oh, yes. Well, I get in that burlesque theater for nothing.
Listen here, you silly man. Did you get my steamship ticket?
What ticket? What steamship?
I guess you're right, Diddy. I just don't understand, Frank.
Frank, please. Have you forgotten about my steamship ticket? My passport? You promised to take care of everything.
Yes. Oh, this, of course. I've got the tickets right here in my pocket. And by the way, I didn't have a photograph for your passport.
Well, why didn't you call me?
Well, I took care of it all right. Don't worry. I just pasted in a swatch from a buffalo robe.
Oh, that's fine. Did you get me that big reduction on the ticket?
Morgan's word is as good as his bond.
Yeah, a very low-grade bond.
A very heavy-handed remark, my inept young cockatoo. Morgan bond is a gilt-edged, double-barrel, blue chip. And furthermore,
Frank, please, did you take care of everything?
Why are you worried, Meredith? You gave me a check for $1,000. The normal price for the two tickets was $800. But I got them for $395, which is more than half off.
Yeah, there must be a catch to this.
What does he mean, Frank?
Oh, disregard him, Meredith. The total and net cost of the tickets was $395.
$395?
Exactly.
Oh, boy, did we get him. Ha, ha, Taylor.
Taylor. Yes. Well, of course, there's a slight additional charge for a messenger to go to the pier.
Here it comes.
Well, who cares? A messenger. How much was it, Frank?
$85.
Did you say $85?
Yes, with a tip, of course. I had to...
Frank, that does seem a little high for a messenger.
Well, the pair was in New York. The boy took a bus both ways.
Well, that brings the bill up to $480, but it's still a steal. Why don't you give him his change, Frank?
His change.
Yes, hey, Frankie, what sort of accommodations did you get for me?
Oh, the very best. Now, look at this deck plan here. Now, this is the location your tickets call for, right here where
mm-hmm.
you see the cross...
Yes. This cabin is right next to the engine room on deck G.
Yeah, that's under the water.
Well, only partly. But I've already had you move to a delightful little hole. I mean, a cabin. Right next to the ship's kennel.
I've got to live next to the kennel?
Well, don't worry. I've already squared it with the dogs. Would you believe it? That crooked purser wanted $200 to switch your cabin, but I beat him down to $150.
$150 to get me a room next to the kennel.
Well, just look, Meredith. It's only 50 yards from the bath.
Well, Meredith will like that. How far is it from the dining room?
Well, about 20 minutes walk as the crow flies. It will make a nice little stroll to sharpen up your appetite. And have I got things fixed for that dining room, steward?
Have?
Yes, for a measly $300, I've got the guy eating out of your hand.
Now, see here, Frank.
The total is now $930.
Frank, I think the idea of tipping a dining room steward $300 is ridiculous.
No, it isn't. Not when he managed to procure a couple of deck chairs for a paltry $75.
Meredith,
you've got...
your $1,000 is now gone and you owe Frank $5.
Wait a minute. I feel a little dizzy.
Well, that's just it. What you need is a boat trip. This will fix you up fine.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be sailing July 2nd. Is that right?
Yes. Could you let me have that $5 before you go?
Yeah. Here you are.
Oh, thank you. Now, here are the tickets.
Yes, your cut rate tickets.
Oh, well. Say, Frank, when do I get to Europe?
Europe? Europe? Meredith, this boat doesn't go to Europe. It goes to Guatemala.
Guatemala?
Yes.
Isn't this the Normandy?
No, Meredith. This is a freight boat. How do you think I got the tickets so cheap?
So cheap? I could have had the royal suite on the Queen Mary for half the money.
Parvenu. I tell you, you'll love this trip, Meredith. You won't even smell the cargo till you get below Florida.
Smell what cargo? What are they carrying?
Live goats and salt mackerel.
Morgan, take these tickets and get out of here. I'm going to stop payment on my $1,000 check, and I want my $5 back.
Well, of all the nerve, you stop that check, I'm stuck with a ticket.
Yeah, why don't you go to Guatemala?
Well, I'd sooner swim there than go on that horrible boat. That's the last time I do a favor for a friend, but I'll get rid of these tickets somehow.
Well, you cool off a minute, Meredith, while Mary Martin sings for us. Step up here, Mary. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, we've never had a girl on this program catch on faster with Friends of Maxwell House than Mary Martin has. And confidentially, I don't blame you.
Oh, excuse me, Mary.
Oh, hello, Mr. Morgan.
Have you planned a vacation for this summer?
Why, not exactly.
Oh, that's fine. I was thinking if you'd care to purchase a couple of tickets...
On your way with those tickets, Morgan. Mary's going to sing.
Okay, but a trip to Guatemala wouldn't do her any harm.
Beat it. Ladies and gentlemen, Mary Martin sings Hometown.
How dear to this heart are the scenes of my childhood.
When fond recollection reminds me of my hometown, want tumble down old Chattery. I want to walk in all the cozy country cousins of my hometown, where the dogs are softly cooing, where there's always nothing doing. I get a welcome from the cozy country cousins of mine. There's an old school door. We used to tumble through the floor, and the tall candy store. There I could go for a dozen lollipops and come back for more. Oh, my hometown, where the garden seat was shady.
Where the beauty was a lady.
Yes, sir, I'm going back to see those cozy country cousins of mine. I can see my cousin Mary in the kitchen, cousin Z behind the clouds.
Who's that cousin over there by the haystack?
That ain't no cousin, that's our cow. I can hear the fire scratching every Friday night at our place.
Who's that croaking like a foghorn?
That's my grandma, she sings bass. Folks all dressed up for the barn dance, listening to the fiddle and the old banjo.
Who's that rube in the white check trousers?
That Hank Perkins, my best boy.
Your best boy.
My best boy.
Your very, 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 very best boy.
My very, very, quite sincerely, not my merely very, very, you, my very, very best boy. There ain't a single solitary thing I have forgotten. There's the bend in the river and the cabin in the cotton. And I can't forget how watermelon smells when they are
alive.
I'd love to walk in on those cousins of mine. Remember just like yesterday, my high school graduation, I was dressed up in the kill'em in a city boy creation. A yellow dress, purple lace, and orange decoration. I can't forget those country cousins of mine. Everything is nice and small there. Gotta hop a train and go.
I'm going back.
The city sights might be terrific to see.
I'm going back.
But they don't really mean a thing to me.
I'm going back.
The only place on earth I want to be is hometown.
My hometown.
Hometown.
My hometown.
I'm coming home to
stay.
Mary, if those folks of yours down in Texas didn't dance to that, they just ain't got feet. And now, here's Fanny Bryce in her incomparable characterization of that unbelievable child, Baby Snook. Tonight, Daddy Snook, played by Hammy Stafford, is in a bad way. He went to a stag affair at his lodge last night and is now trying to recover from his horrible after effects of the wassail bowl. He is resting in his study as Baby Snook enters. Let's hear you groan, Daddy.
Oh, my head. Oh.
Hello, Daddy.
Oh, you're here. Go away, Snook. Daddy's trying to rest. Well, what are you laughing at?
Because you're wearing that funny hat.
It's not a funny hat. It's an ice bag.
It looks like a funny hat.
Well, it's not. Only crazy people wear funny hats.
Crazy people?
Yes. And this thing on my head is an ice bag.
Are you hot?
No, I'm not hot. I've got chills.
From the ice bag?
No, I've got chills because I have a fever.
Huh?
My temperature's high, so my resistance is low, and when my body heat rises, it makes me feel cold, and I'm really very warm.
Can I get you a funny hat, Daddy?
I don't want any funny hat. And leave me alone. My head is splitting. Oh.
Why's your head splitting, Daddy?
Oh, because I worked too late in the office last night.
How was your smoker, Daddy?
All right, you little snooper. So I went to a smoker. And don't ask me to tell you what a smoker is, and don't bother me at all. Just get out of here.
All right.
Oh, my stomach. Am I sick?
Daddy!
Oh, what do you want?
How'd you get sick?
Oh, well, at this party last night, there was so much smoke that it got into my lungs. Cause it's heavy. Now, do you know what's the matter with me?
Uh-huh. You got a hangover.
No. What are you saying?
That's what Mommy said on the phone.
Oh, she did, eh? Big blabbermouth.
Huh?
Nothing. Go away and let me get some sleep.
All right.
Oh.
Daddy!
Oh, don't do that.
Do what, Daddy?
Yell in my ear like that.
Huh?
Yell in my ear.
All right.
Oh! My head. Why, what are you doing to me?
You told me to yell in your ear.
Look, please leave me alone for a half an hour. Just one half hour. Please.
All right. Daddy!
Oh. Now what is it?
Where did you go last night?
To my lodge. It was our annual smoker.
Did you take Mommy?
No.
Why?
Because no women are allowed there. Only elk.
Then why did you go?
Because I'm an elk.
Huh?
I said I'm an elk.
What
are you howling about?
Because I think you're crazy.
Oh, what's crazy about my being an elk? A lot of people are elks.
Oh.
My boss is not only an elk, he's a lion, a moose, and an eagle.
How much does it cost to see him?
It doesn't cost anything. Those are the lodges he belongs to. Now run along and let Daddy's headache get better.
I'll go if you buy me an ice cream cone.
Oh, ice cream. Oh, you can't have any ice cream cone. Don't jar my head like that.
I want an ice cream cone.
I can't afford it. It works too hard for my money.
Aren't you rich, Daddy?
No, I'm not rich. That is, not in cash. But I'm wealthy in other things, I guess. Oh, my head.
What are you wealthy in, Daddy?
Well, I have your mother and you and your baby sisters. I place a great value in all of you.
How much?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I rate you as $1 million, your mother as $1 million, and the baby at $500,000.
Oh. Daddy.
What?
Tell the baby and buy me an ice cream cone.
Now, listen to me. You're old enough to learn not to ask for so many things and to give a little more.
Give what, Daddy?
Well, for instance, you have a lot of toys.
Mm-hmm.
Only last month you got that great big doll for a present.
You mean the one that Uncle Louis sent me?
Yes. And that poor little Smith girl down the street has no toys and no Uncle Louis to send her any.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wouldn't you like to give her that doll?
No.
Well, what would you like to give her?
Uncle Louis.
Brooks, I'm afraid you're not imbued with the spirit of charity. I want you to grow up and be loved by everybody. Be kind and generous.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be much happier, too. You'll learn what a wonderful thrill there is in giving. Much greater than receiving.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why I'm telling you all these things?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because you don't want to buy me an ice cream cone.
That's not it at all. I thought maybe you'd remember that Sunday is Father's Day. And, well, you might buy me a little present.
All right, Daddy. Would you like me to buy you a chocolate
cake? Oh, no.
With whipped cream?
Oh, stop that.
With marshmallows?
Oh, I'm sick. Look, don't mention food.
Well, what shall I buy you, Daddy?
Oh, anything. Go away now. Let me pull myself together.
All right. I see how much money I got my little piggy back.
Yes, yes. Oh, thank heaven. Now maybe I'll rest. No! What's all that noise?
I lost the key to my bank and I gotta break it open.
Oh, don't go now, please. No.
I got it open, Daddy.
Oh, good. Now leave me alone.
All right. You know what I'm going to buy you for Father's Day?
No, what?
A new watch.
Oh, that's silly. I've already got a beautiful watch.
No, you ain't, Daddy.
Oh, why do you say that?
Because I just used it to break open my back.
What? Why, you little vandal, take that.
Boy, oh boy, can that Hanley Stafford take it. Incidentally, I have a wire from the National Father's Day Committee, quote, condolences to the most patient father of the most precocious child in America, end quote. I certainly agree with him. Oh, say, Ted.
Yes, Bob?
You know, Ted, in a gathering of friends the other night, someone knowing I've done a turn or two here on Good News began asking me questions about Maxwell House coffee.
That so? What, for instance?
Well, for one thing, about the freshness of Maxwell House and how important that freshness is.
Mm-hmm. I imagine you were able to answer that, Bob.
I told them that Maxwell House was roaster fresh and that no coffee could be fresher than that.
Well, that's a very proper answer.
But say, Ted, just how much difference does coffee freshness really make?
All the difference in the world, Bob, in your cup of coffee. You see, freshness is essential for a really superior cup of coffee. Loss of freshness means loss of flavor. It's air that steals coffee freshness. And ground coffee packed in ordinary containers where the air can get at it loses as much as 45%, nearly half its flavor in only 9 days. Now, that's a lot of flavor to lose, flavor that'll never reach your coffee cup. Because of this, Maxwell House coffee is packed in an airtight super vacuum can, while still warm and fragrant from the roasting oven. All the air is removed from the can before the coffee is packed. No air can get in afterwards. This way, you get your coffee not just days fresh with some of its flavor, but roaster fresh with all its flavor. Yes, Bob Taylor and friends, all the original full flavor and goodness of this superb blend is there. A final guarantee that your cup of Maxwell House coffee will be good to the last drop. Another number you didn't expect to hear, Meredith Wilson arrangement of Would You Like to Take a Walk? Once again, we turn to our dramatic department. The playlist, Thicker Than Water. The author, Milton Geiger.
The cast,
Robert Taylor as Dr. Bruce Vickery, Wright Kramer as his father. And the music, Meredith, please. Sitting in his office in a great metropolitan hospital is Dr. Stanley Vickery, chief of the surgical staff. Just now, Dr. Vickery is not so much occupied as deeply, solemnly preoccupied. As his long, pale fingers drum nervously on the desktop, there's a sudden sharp knock on the door, and at once dignity and hard pride return to the defeated eye. His voice is firm again.
Come in, please.
Hello, Father.
I believe I've mentioned before that so long as you are identified with this hospital, we cease to be father and son. Am I clear, Dr. Vickery?
Yes, Dr. Vickery.
Sit down, please.
Thank you. I'd rather stand. You stand for me?
Yes. Are you familiar with the schedule of operations for tomorrow morning?
I know that I'm doing 3 routine appendectomies.
I told you that I dislike the word routine. It implies a too casual approach to surgery, which is never a casual matter. However, that is beside the point right now. I've arranged for Dr. McCauley to handle your schedule tomorrow.
I'm not operating tomorrow at all?
I didn't say that, Doctor. You will not perform your scheduled operation. We have another assignment for you.
Well, I'd like to know something about it before I...
Of course. The essential facts of the case are on this card. I have also in my desk a statement signed by the patient releasing the operating surgeon from any blame. I thought it desirable.
At least, why should that be necessary?
I said desirable, Doctor.
Look at the card, please. Oh, no. No, Dr. Vickery, this isn't fair.
Indeed? Oh.
It's outrageous to ask any man to sacrifice his reputation under these circumstances.
I'm sorry you feel that way about it, because I'm going to have to be rather insistent that you attempt the operation.
Father, I will not attempt the operation.
Dr. Vickery, if you please.
Very well, I refuse to operate, Dr. Vickery.
And if I command it, as chief of staff of this hospital?
I still refuse. Chief of staff, always chief of staff.
Yes, and I demand that you recognize that authority.
And I refuse. Chief of staff, to me, your son. I can't say you're flesh and blood. That's not blood that's running in your veins, it's ice water. I've always been doctor to you ever since my graduation from medical school. Before that, I was Mr. Vickery, and before that, Master Bruce.
You will moderate your speech, Doctor.
No, no, I won't. I never was a son to you. I never was Bruce, or my boy, or my son. When I tried to call you Dad and to climb into your lap, you pushed me away. No weakness, you always said. No weakness, Master Bruce. That was my reward for love. But I went on in spite of you. I made good. I amounted to something in medicine and surgery. And then you began to fear me. I was dangerous to you. You were afraid of me. Afraid I usurp your power, your greatness.
My son, you may not believe it, but when you accuse me of being cold, it is because I want you to be self-reliant. When I call you Dr. Vickery, it's because of a passion for discipline that I want my son to have. Please believe that. And believe that I trusted, that I trust you now as I trust no other creature on this earth.
You ask me now to try this operation that can't be successful. Stake my reputation on a case so desperate that you've asked the patient to sign a release. That poor man, whoever he is going to die, and you know it. And you want him to die under my knife. Well, I won't do it.
I am older, experienced. I know. I know that he need not die.
Yes, and why don't you operate?
It takes a strong hand, a young one, and a steady one. Believe in me and my experience.
That would be turning the other cheek with a vengeance, wouldn't it?
All right. You want to know why I want you to operate? Shall I tell you?
Certainly. Why?
Deep in my heart, I know that only one man can successfully perform this operation. And you are that man. And you are afraid. Very well, Doctor. Good day. And thank you for coming down.
Very well. I'll be on hand at 8 a.m. sharp, Dr. Vickery.
Good.
But I demand that you assist me.
I'll be there. Shall we go over the case in some detail? May I offer a suggestion, Doctor?
Very grateful.
Well, the patient's outlook is good. He has an abundant faith in his surgeons.
Very well.
However, naturally enough, he does exhibit some pronounced nervous system within the symptoms. Excuse me a moment. I want a glass of water.
You know that. Yeah. Not any too steady yourself, are you, Doctor?
Well, I said it takes a younger hand. I recommend that the patient be given one capsule of Nebutal at once. Then another tomorrow, shortly before he enters the operating room.
Thank you, Doctor. What else?
Excuse me a moment. Nurse Morrow, please.
Yes, Dr. Vickery.
Will you bring in some Nebutal, please?
At once, Doc.
You'll be needing them, and the dispensary is slow in sending them up sometimes.
Here you are, Doctor.
Thank you. Thank you, Miss Morrow. I am a bit unnerved, and mind if I have one of these myself?
Certainly not, they're yours. But I was under the impression they were for our patients.
Precisely. Precisely. And one capsule at once.
Father, you mean that...
That the patient is to receive another capsule in the morning. That I shall be on hand promptly at the appointed hour. And that, needless to say again, I shall not be able to render the least assistance.
Why didn't you tell me if it's you?
It's enough that you understand now. This is my faith in you. This is my father, love. We have a rendezvous tomorrow morning at 8. Until then, no weakness. My son.
And until then, goodbye, Father. Well, Ted, it's about time we all joined in that pleasant custom of ours here on Good News, a steaming cup of that good Maxwell House coffee. I, for one, am ready for it.
And so am I. But first, let me just take long enough to remind the folks of one thing. Getting close to vacation time for many of you. Now, of course, it's grand to get away, but sometimes you don't like to leave behind some of those little things you enjoy most at home. Like a cup of Maxwell House coffee, for instance. Well, fortunately, that's one thing you can always tote right along with you. Your Maxwell House coffee. Yes, because Maxwell House is packed in that super vacuum can. You can buy two cans or two dozen at a time, knowing that each can, as you open it, will be as fragrantly fresh as the hour it left the roasting oven. So wherever you go, however far away from cities and towns, you can always add to your vacation enjoyment by having a fragrant cup of your favorite Maxwell House coffee. And to you folks, like the many of us who are staying at home, well, it'll pay you to stock up on Maxwell House, too. I wonder how many of you realize at what low prices you can now buy fine coffee. More and more people are taking advantage of these prices every day.
Sounds like good advice, Ted. So, friends, let's all enjoy a steaming cup of mellow-flavored Maxwell House coffee right now. The music, Meredith, if you'll favor.
We now pause briefly for station identification.
You're listening to KFI, Los Angeles.
Isn't Douglas MacPhail of the Clan McMorgan?
Hello, Frank. How are you?
Well, just fine, Doug. Say, what are your plans for a vacation this summer, old man?
Well, I'm looking for a place to go, Frank. Any suggestions?
Have I? Well, how would you like a nice boat trip?
On your way, Morgan. Go peddle those tickets somewhere else.
Taylor, I'll sue you for restraint of trade.
All right, go ahead and sue. MacPhail, you go ahead and sing.
Okay, Bob. Here's a song called Silver on the Sea.
By the moon above, so light on doggies and let me dream of the one girl I love. There's silver on the stage tonight. We've been on the trail all day. So light on doggies and you'll dream too. Of a rain far away, of the rain's waiting for you, where the streams never go dry, and the grass sparkles with dewdrops in the meadows of the sweet by and by. There's silver on the stage tonight, wrinkled by the moon above, so light on doggies and let me dream of the one I love, of the girl I love.
The one I love,
the girl.
right, Doug. Thank you very much. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet our guest of honor for this evening, one of the most talented actors who has ever appeared on the screen. Sit down, Morgan, sit down. One of the most gifted of the child stars who have come to mean so much to Hollywood in particular and to the public in general. Here he is, the star of David Copperfield, Captain's Courageous, and MGM's latest achievement, Lord Jeff, Master Freddie Bartholomew.
Thank you.
Yeah, Freddie, I tried to see the preview of Lord Jeff the other night, but there was such a mob I couldn't get tickets.
Well, that sounds like a lame excuse, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, now, Freddie, you mustn't jump at conclusions. I couldn't see the preview, but I saw it here at the studio this morning, and I think it's great.
Well, that makes me very happy. Wasn't Mickey Rooney marvelous?
Yes, he certainly was. You and Mickey were both top. All the kids were great. How did you like the picture, Freddie?
Well, I haven't seen it yet. You know, it's going to be quite a while before it's showed at the theater in our neighborhood.
Oh, why don't you see it when it opens at Grauman's Chinese?
I'd rather not answer that, Mr. Taylor.
Well, if you have some personal reason, that's okay with me. But if you're in a hurry to see your picture, I don't understand why you have to wait till it reaches your neighborhood theater.
Well, I know you don't. But, Mr. Taylor, have you ever tried to sneak in the side door of Grauman's Chinese?
Well, have you?
Freddie,
now you're talking my language. Why, when I was your age, I was the most notorious theater crasher in Nebraska.
Really?
Yes.
You know, I was quite a menace in London some years ago. That is, until one unfortunate afternoon.
What happened?
Well, I was smuggling 17 young friends into the gallery of the Hackney Empire.
Did you say 17?
Well, I was giving a theater party.
Oh.
As luck would have it, we were collared. We hadn't seen the show either.
What'd they do to you?
Well, they hustled a lot of us off to the Old Bailey. And that's really the most terrifying jail in all of London.
Do you mean to say you actually spent a night in the Old Bailey?
Did I? Why, that's my favorite hotel. I always stop there when I'm in London.
When you're in London. Frank, it might interest you to know that the Old Bailey is not a hotel. It's a prison.
Oh, well, no wonder they were so strict about having guests in your room. That's, it's a great place, London.
Yes, it is, Mr. Morgan. A very jolly town.
Freddy. I didn't see you there, you little nipper. What ho, pip, pip. What do you hear from the group?
Hi, Mr. Morgan. I've never heard you use a British accent on this program. Are you English?
Am I English? Why, Freddy, my grandfather was the ringmaster in Piccadilly Circus. As a matter of fact...
Now, wait a minute, Morgan. Yeah. I'm not going to stand here and let you try to fool this kid.
Why, I don't see your absurd... I'm not fooling him.
You're not fooling anybody, Mr. Morgan.
I'm the victim of a cabal. Master Bartholomew, have you ever heard me tell an untruth on this program?
Have I?
I accept your apology. It's been my good fortune, Freddy, to lead a very colorful existence. My career has probably been the most adventurous one of modern times.
It has, Mr. Morgan?
Yes, it's my misfortune now to be surrounded by such knaves and dolts, such pallid provincial pinheads, such unimaginative poltroons, they can't believe me. But, Freddy, as one Briton to another, you must believe me.
I was trained to believe in and tell the truth, Mr. Morgan.
Yes, and so was I, Freddy. Have you ever seen the Morgan coat of arms?
Coat of arms? He's got a seal now. Frank, will you excuse me for a few minutes?
Where are you going?
Down to the Liars Club to hear a little truth.
Cheap jibe.
Now, you were telling me about the Morgan seal.
Oh, yes. Balances a ball on his nose. Oh, you mean our coat of arms. Yes. I've got it right here on my signet ring. Here, you can look at it. There it is.
What a remarkable ring.
Yes.
I can't quite make out the motto, though.
The motto? Oh, yes. It says, In hoc signo veritas. Do you know what that means, son?
Yes, sir. It means, in this sign is the truth.
It does? Well, that's a relief. For years, I've been worried about that in hoc part. How do you like the ring, Freddy?
Oh, it's quite distinguished, in a crummy sort of way.
Yes, that's a very fitting description. What? Look, Freddy, in the lower corner of the shield is a lion rampant. In the upper corner is a griffin couchant. That represents truth. The whole design is in a fold of azure, which represents the truth and honesty. That's the Morgan crest, Freddy.
Well, that's wonderful, Mr. Morgan. How did it come into your family?
Well, my great-grandfather, Sir Henry Morgan, stole it from the Queen of Spain.
Sir Henry Morgan?
Yes.
Was he your great-grandfather?
But of course. Why, the son of the sea has been in the Morgan blood for generations.
It has?
Yes, yes. We used to think it was anemia. I'll never forget the day when I found Sir Henry's long-lost treasure chart in the attic of my grandfather's house.
What an adventure that became.
Did you really go on a treasure hunt, Mr. Morgan?
I certainly did, son. I hired a little sloop and commanded her myself, with a crew of the most villainous cutthroats that ever manned a ship.
Well, where did you find such a crew?
They were my brothers. We sailed from Cape Cod Harbor, and with a favoring following wind, we were able to drop our pilot on the third day. The sharks got him, and that was all there was to that. The fifth day, we were becalmed in the Straits of Madagascar.
Cape Cod to Madagascar in 5 days?
Yes, well, the lights were against us. We were lying at anchor with all sails set.
You were what?
Lying.
That's what I thought.
Yes, we were... Now, look here, young man. Are you insinuating this story is untrue?
Why, no, sir. I believe in your respect for the truth. It's as strong as my own.
Yes.
In hoc signo veritas, you know.
Veritas, yes, that's right. Well, we were on the high seas without a breath of breeze. The crew was getting restive, the water was all gone, and there was only a bare 100 gallons of whiskey between us and the torments of thirst.
Good heavens, no soda?
Soda. Soda, yes, that's a very intelligent question, my lad. Claims he's only 14. Well, at any rate, 2 days later, I was on the bridge with my telescope glued to my eye, and I sighted a breeze.
You sighted a breeze?
A breeze? A monsoon on the port bow, a typhoon to starboard, a water spout in the stern. The ship soon sprang a leak.
A leak? What did you do?
I put a pan under it. Then, having removed the immediate danger, I piped all hands on deck, and we battled with the elements for 36 hours. The elements won.
The ship went down?
And now reposes in Davy Jones' locker. Cast adrift on the turbulent deep, I clung desperately to a spar and struck out for the distant shore.
What a predicament.
Yes, there was only one distressing incident. 200 yards from land, I sighted a single shark cruising hungrily about. He looked at me and licked his chops.
Excuse me, Mr. Morgan.
Yes, my boy?
I understood that sharks never traveled alone, always in schools.
Schools, yes. Well, this one was playing hooky.
In hoc signo?
Veritas.
Yes, I know, Miss Morgan. But what about the treasure?
Oh, yes, the treasure. Well, by a strange coincidence, this island was the location of Sir Henry's booty. I lost no time in searching for the cave. In order not to keep you in suspense any longer, I'll tell you at once that when I found the spot, the treasure had already been removed. A tragic ending for such a brave adventure.
Now, Mr. Morgan, you mean to tell me that these gentlemen on the program accuse you of telling falsehoods?
They do, Freddie. It's only an occasional young fellow like yourself with high-minded, honorable instincts that can recognize the truth.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan.
Yes.
I suppose you'd like to know what became of your great-grandfather's treasure.
I'd give half my life. It's,
Well, sir, I reached the cave 5 minutes before you did and took the treasure away in a homemade balloon.
Freddie, in hoc signo.
Veritas.
Yes. Well, so long, son. I'm going to find a new slogan for the Morgan coat of arms.
Good work, Freddie. Good work. Thanks for coming up and putting Morgan in his place. Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you again that Freddie's picture, Lord Jeff, is well worth breaking into your neighborhood theater to see. Better still, buy a ticket and stay out of the Old Bailey. We present now one of the most important and exciting musical premieres in the history of radio. The first performance of a novel blending of words and music entitled Hollywood, composed by Walter Samuels. The narration for the composition, which is a dramatic story of Helen Purdy, a small-town girl who wanted to be a movie star, was written by Ed Sullivan, the celebrated columnist of the Chicago Tribune News Syndicate. Helen Purdy will be played tonight by Fanny Bright. Ladies and gentlemen, here it is, the world premiere of Hollywood.
Scene is a railroad station in a small town. Half the population has come down to see Helen Purdy off for Hollywood.
All aboard!
Goodbye, Mother. Be sure to write, dear.
Tell us all about Hollywood.
All aboard!
You better hurry, dear. Oh, wait a minute. Dad's bringing old Mr. Nichols, the station master, to say goodbye.
Hello, Mrs. Purdy.
Hello, Mr.
Hello,
Nichols.
Hello, Helen. My, to think of Ed Purdy's little girl winning a contest and going out to Hollywood to be a movie star. Well, good luck, young lady. God bless you.
Thank you.
Now you'd better get aboard. Chief is right on schedule.
Goodbye, Mother.
Goodbye,
Dad.
Goodbye,
Mr. Nichols. Goodbye.
Bye-bye, honey. Be sure to write.
Goodbye.
Say hello to Garbo.
Goodbye.
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 here, miss. I stowed your bag away.
Thank you. It's a present from my mother.
For your trip to Hollywood. A lot of youngsters going to Hollywood have made this trip. Right in my car.
Do any of them make good?
Oh, yes, indeed, miss. Indeed, they do. Just as you'll make good.
It seemed so much fun when I won the contest. But now I'm scared.
Oh, they all feel that way, missy. You just forget it all and enjoy the scenery. It's a mighty pretty trip with a pot of gold at the end of it.
I hope so. It means so much.
What time shall I call you in the morning?
Well, what time do we reach Los Angeles?
Oh, little afternoon.
Call me at 9.
Yes, ma'am. Good night. Sleep well. Pleasant dreams.
Good night.
Quiet, please. No. More passion to those lines when you read them. More. Now, let's try it again. The clerk, when you walk into the scene, turn and face this angle. Cheat a bit so we'll get a full face shot. Now, let's get it this time. Quiet, please.
Quiet, please.
Quiet, please.
Okay for some.
That's it. Roll them.
Good evening, my little chickadees. Another Sunday night at the Trocadero, most famous nightclub west of the Rockies, with the usual star-studded audience. There's Al Jolson and Jack Benny, high a buck next to the back wall. Spencer Tracy, Groucho Marx, and Bob Taylor. And under a ringside table, the Rich Brothers giving each other a hot foot. Good evening, Myrna. Hello, Arthur. We open tonight's parade of hopefuls with a little girl from the Midwest. She's going to try a tap dance, and her name, honey, what's your name again?
Helen Purdy.
Oh, yes, to be sure. Helen Purdy. All right, Helen, go ahead. Hit it, boys.
Pretty bad. Why do they bring those kids in here? She's pitiful.
She's from Dixie.
Far from hunger.
Take her off. I only introduce these act fellows. I don't book them, and now we go on with the rest of the show. Take it away.
Wait a moment, Miss Purdy. Sit down at our table.
I flop. It means so much to me. Oh, are you Robert Taylor?
Yes, but don't let that upset you. I'm just a small-town kid like yourself. And I know just how you feel. Forget it. Every star in this room is flopped, time and again. All of us have been considered washed up. But keep your chin up. Keep trying.
You're a swell person, Mr. Taylor. I'll keep my chin up, and I won't quit.
Central casting. Central casting. Call later. No work today, Miss Purdy. I'm sorry. Call later. Nothing today, Miss Purdy. I'm sorry. Call later.
Hey, Bert, how about those prints? Come down to me right away. Yes, Mr. Johnson. Of course, Mr. Johnson. Certainly, Mr. Johnson. Certainly, Mr. Johnson. I don't want to be disturbed. Yes, Mr. Johnson. Bring in your book. Yes, Mr. Johnson. Make a letter. Yes, Mr. Johnson. By the way, what did you think of the preview last night? I want you to give me an honest opinion. Awesome, Mr. Johnson. Terrific, Mr. Johnson. Great, Mr. Johnson. You're a genius, Mr. Johnson. Not making money. I can't understand it. The public are morons. Yes, Mr. Johnson. The public are morons. I can't understand it. Yes, Mr. Johnson. Yes, Mr. Johnson. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
Yes,
Mr. Johnson.
Yes. Kill those lights. Tell the company they can rest for 15 minutes while we change the setup.
15-minute recess, but don't go off the set. All stand in, stand by.
I want to shoot it from this angle, Charlie. I want to pick them up as they come through the door. And not too much light on the background. Tone it down.
Will I feel loving you?
It's a dolly shop. I want to move in here and grab a three-quarter. Say, who's that singing?
I don't know, boss. She's just an extra.
Tell her to come over here.
The director wants to see you, miss.
Me?
Yes.
Well, what's your name, miss?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make any noise, honestly.
I'm not bawling you out. What's your name?
Helen Purdy. I'm an extra.
Well, you're not going to be an extra now. You're great. Terrific. Just the type I was looking for. And I find you right on my own set. Bert, get the hairdress on the set right away. Miller, tell Wardrobe to send a man over here immediately. Smith, call makeup and ask Jack Dawn to drop everything. And come over to stage 8.
You mean
you're going to be a star, a great star. Get over there and punch that song home. Start your cameras rolling. Now, take it easy, honey.
Will my dream come true? Will I be loving you? Oh, there's a happiness unknown.
Hey, she's another sheer. Helen Purdy. I read about her in a Willa Parton song. That's what makes Hollywood so exciting. Yesterday's extra, today's star. Here she comes now. Autograph, Miss Purdy.
Autograph, Miss Purdy.
Autograph, Miss Purdy.
Autograph, Miss Purdy.
Autograph.
Autograph.
Autograph. Autograph.
Copy boy, get this down to the composing room right away. Tell them to use a two-column cut on page 1. And here's the caption, Hollywood honors Cinderella Girl.
Helen Purdy, on behalf of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, I present you with this gold statuette, the greatest award which Hollywood can bestow. Good morning, miss. You better get up, Miss Purdy. We'll be in 30 minutes.
What? Oh, all right. All right, thank you. Sorry, but I've been sleeping so soundly.
That's all right, missy. You probably were dreaming. All youngsters do the night before they reach Hollywood.
Yes, I was dreaming. The nicest dream I ever had.
I knew it. Last trip when I rapped on the door of a young lady, just as I did for you, do you know what she hollered back? She said, all right, Mr. Lubitz. And sometimes they call me Mr. D. Mills. All depends on what they're dreaming about. Better come along now. We're coming into the station.
So this is Hollywood.
Thank you, miss. Thank you very much. And good luck to you.
Porter, you didn't tell me. Do any of these dreams come true?
Indeed they do, miss. Indeed they do. Whatever you dream is going to happen. You see this here rabbit's foot, miss? I hung that on your door all night long. So don't worry none, miss.
Thank you. And now which way do I go?
Just follow that porter who has your bag. You go right up those stairs and out through that door.
Out through that door. I suppose every small-town girl who has come to Hollywood has gone through that door. Myrna Loy passed through it. Even Joan Crawford stood here, just as I'm standing now, wondering if she'd make good, if her dreams would come true, just as I'm wondering if my dreams would come true.
Ladies and gentlemen, a word from Ted Pearson.
Thank you, Bob. Well, next Sunday is Father's Day, so by way of paying tribute to many a dad and as a reminder to an equal number of devoted wives, let's listen for a brief minute to a quick breakfast time.
Hey, Mom, what's the matter with Dad? Is he worried or mad or something?
Well, not that I know of, son. Why?
Oh, only that he always used to have 2 cups of coffee this morning. Here he goes off again without even finishing one. Funny.
Well, most youngsters have pretty sharp eyes when it comes to checking up on Dad. Most wives have, too. So just let me say this to all you ladies listening. If your son's dad has been skipping the coffee lately or leaving his coffee cup half filled, why don't you treat him to Maxwell House coffee? I know he'll appreciate it. He'll thank you for it. Because men do enjoy the extra smooth, mellow flavor, the full-bodied goodness of this matchless blend of the world's choice coffee. In fact, you both like its deeply satisfying, roaster-rich flavor. And you'll find it easier to make a better cup of coffee, too, no matter how you make it. The reason is, we offer you Maxwell House in a choice of two grinds. The special drip grind Maxwell House for all drip and glass coffee makers, and the regular grind for percolator or boiled coffee. Two different methods, so naturally two different grinds, but one delicious flavor. Now, if you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, buy a can of this better coffee tomorrow in a one-pound size, or if you use lots of coffee, you'll find a two-pound size a really thrifty buy.
Comes now the concert hall, which Meredith, in honor of Father's Day, is presenting for men only. But I feel sure that a lot of you ladies will be sorry if you don't listen, because, after all, everybody loves a really great march tune. And Meredith's concert hall selection tonight is a group of some of the great marches by John Philip Sousa. So pull up your chairs, men, and get ready to stamp your feet. But don't go away, girls. All right, Meredith? Ladies and gentlemen, I'll give you a few hints on the extraordinarily fine program we're lining up for you next week. To begin with, our special guest list will be headed by one of the most brilliant performers on our lot, that personable young fellow, Jimmy Stewart. Other honored guests will be Una Merkel, Barnett Parker, and the professional tennis champion of the world, Ellsworth Vines. All this, mind you, in addition to your regular favorites, Fanny Bryce and Hammy Stafford, Frank Morgan, Mary Martin, Douglas McPhail, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. Remember that your ticket of admission to this super fine hour of entertainment is just your loyalty to Maxwell House Coffee. And be sure to listen to Good News next Thursday. Incidentally, have you seen Toy Wife yet? Well, when you see this fine performances of Louise Reiner, Melvin Douglas, and Robert Young, I know you'll get a real kick out of it. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. This is Bob Taylor saying good night.
Next Monday, thousands of retail grocers from every section of the country are meeting at Cincinnati for the 41st annual convention of the National Association of Retail Grocers. Our heartiest greetings go out to the grocers of the nation.
May their convention be the greatest ever held. This is Ted Pearson saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop.
Everywhere I go,
this is the National Broadcasting Company.
You are listening to KFI, Los Angeles.